The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Hello and welcome to Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. I'm here with Maximilian Bolk and Guy Giuffredi to talk about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. We're recording episode 57 on Thursday, July 10th at 9 p.m. And this isn't just any episode, it's the grand finale of season two, right before our summer break, with a few well-deserved weeks off are ahead. And today marks a personal milestone for me. I've just completed my EMBA at HSG and ETH. Definitely worth celebrating. So yes, I've poured myself a glass of wine. Let's hope I don't start slurring. Guy, let's keep it tight. We have a big episode ahead of us. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by our partners at the Upscaler Program and Omnium. Guy, what's on the agenda?
As you said, we've got a packed lineup worthy of a proper season finale. We'll kick things off with the recently announced $162 million funding round for Climeworks. Then we'll cover Mistral's potential $1 billion raise and the jaw-dropping stock-based compensation at OpenAI. Our main topic dives into Switzerland's positioning as one of the most attractive global hubs for top talent. In the listener Q&A, we'll go deep on the Beekeeper transaction, which many of you have asked us about, and we'll wrap up with an exclusive look at the RTDT funding story.
A strong finale for season two indeed. But before we dive into the headlines, let's take a quick look at the European funding landscape for June. Startups in Europe raised 5.3 billion euros across 480 rounds, up from 4 billion euros and 467 rounds in May. So momentum is picking up again. In terms of sector funding volume, defense gained most traction with 658 million euros. In second place came mobility, followed by EVs, digital lending, and drug discovery on place five. If we look at deal count, AI agents were leading with 33 deals, followed by digital health, medtech, biotech, and digital infrastructure. That's it from Europe. Now let's zoom into Switzerland and kick things off with Climeworks, a bold signal from Zurich's climate tech scene. Climeworks, the Swiss CO2 removal startup, has raised $162 million in a new funding round, pushing their total funding beyond the $1 billion mark. But it's not all smooth sailing. This comes on the heels of a significant round of layoffs, which we've covered on this podcast in previous episodes. After the negative headlines, this round, led by Builders Vision and Partners Group, sends a very positive signal. According to Climeworks, it's the largest carbon removal investment globally so far this year. It's definitely a time of uncertainty for Climeworks, so I was positively surprised they managed to raise this round. Guy, you've been digging into this. What's your take? My first thought was, is this a cap table restructuring? It feels like the lead investors took the opportunity to secure more equity at a lower valuation. Sounds like a down round to me. Any insights?
Indeed, we took a deeper look over the past week. To assess whether it's a restructuring or a straightforward valuation adjustment, we built a cap table and focused on the last two rounds. If our assumptions are correct, this new round came in at a $1.2 billion pre-money valuation. That's roughly a third below the post-money valuation of the 2022 round, which was $1.8 billion when Partners Group first came on board. So yes, clearly a down round. Now, if we look one round further back, the 2020 round, Climeworks was valued at $350 million post-money. So early investors are still sitting on a healthy 2x plus return. It's important to keep that context in mind. So yes to a down round, but no to a full cap table restructuring.
But I'm curious how the founders and their common shares were affected. In cases like this, especially capital-intensive ventures that drag on, the founders often take the hit. I'd expect complex ESOPs or restructuring to compensate them. So yes, a valuation haircut of a third, but understandable given the environment.
Agreed. It looks like the lead investors saw an opportunity to increase their stakes at a fair price, possibly also a way to secure their existing investments. Let's not forget, this was a bold move by Partners Group, stepping outside their usual territory with a venture-style bet.
In any case, kudos to Climeworks. The Swiss ecosystem needs visible returns like these. Many local investors are involved, and Climeworks is a bellwether for Swiss climate tech. Hats off to them. Now, from Zurich back to the European stage, we've got another headline. Mistral, the French AI unicorn, is reportedly close to raising a $1 billion US dollar equity round, this time with backing from Abu Dhabi. The investor in question isn't your typical tech VC. It's MGX, a recently launched Emirati fund backed by Mubadala, with a focus on sovereign-scale deep tech and energy applications. Their goal? Deploy up to $100 billion US dollars to AI and AI infrastructure. That's right, $100 billion according to Bloomberg. Talks are still in early stages, but if this deal closes, it would send a strong signal of confidence, not just in Mistral, but in European AI more broadly. Guy, what's your take? Is this kind of sovereign backing from Abu Dhabi a blessing or a risk? It depends. Capital strength is great, but large sovereign investors often come with their own expectations and influence. We've seen what that can mean in other cases, like WeFox.
It's a double-edged sword when a sovereign wealth fund invests. It really depends on the valuation they're coming in a billion-dollar round, how much equity they're actually taking, and what rights they're securing beyond just shares. But overall, it's worth noting, MGX has already invested in a number of AI startups, not just in Europe. They're in OpenAI and even participated in their latest $40 billion round. And they're also in Anthropic. So for them, this investment in Mistral is just further diversification. And for Europe, it's probably a net positive. MGX has a close connection to Saudi Arabia and the broader Middle East. And with their multilingual foundation, not just English, but also French and German, they might even become a more regional AI player. I don't see any sovereignty issues with Mistral here. They'll likely keep control. I also don't expect any geopolitical entanglements as a result of this investment.
Let's jump briefly to the US with an absolutely wild story that once again shows how fierce the battle for AI talent has become. According to the information, OpenAI spent $4.4 billion US dollars on stock-based compensation last year alone. Yes, $4.4 billion. That's 119% of their annual revenue.
Insane.
They literally paid out more in stock than they made in revenue. Just to compare, before its IPO, Google's stock comp was at 16%, Facebook's at 6%, and even Snowflake was only around 30%. So yeah, this is no longer startup logic, this is war chest logic. And what triggered this arms race? Meta aggressively poached at least 9 OpenAI researchers. That prompted OpenAI's CTO Mark Chen to announce even more generous stock packages to stop the bleeding. There's one story I heard today that just blew my mind. A senior engineer from OpenAI's Super Alignment team reportedly received a $200 million US dollar pay package offer. $200 million for one engineer. That's just wild. No disrespect to engineers, of course. But that's superstar athlete territory. And at the same time, OpenAI is preparing a massive restructuring. They plan to replace their current hybrid model with a for-profit subsidiary under a non-profit umbrella, with a more traditional public benefit corporation setup. In this structure, employees could end up owning a third of the company, Microsoft another third, and the rest would go to existing investors. The non-profit parent would effectively dissolve. And don't forget, Elon Musk is suing OpenAI over this shift, potentially angling for equity as part of the legal process. So yes, the cap table could get complicated. Back to the question, is that 190% stock comp just the price of top talent, or are investors effectively funding a loyalty bonus program to retain OpenAI's people?
It's crazy either way. Let's put this in perspective. Those $4.4 billion US dollars in stock grants were given out in 2024, when OpenAI was valued at around $160 billion US dollars. Today, with SoftBank's recent investment, the valuation is around $300 billion US dollars. That means the value of those equity grants is closer to $8 billion US dollars now. Just absurd numbers. To me, it's clearly a loyalty premium. Aligning employees with the future valuation upside. But of course, it comes with strict vesting clauses to keep them locked in. Otherwise, they'd just jump ship to the highest bidder. I had also noted Zuckerberg's mega checks. We're not even talking tech anymore. This is sports logic. Ronaldo, Messi, Bale. Maybe studying natural sciences really does pay off in the end if you go all in from day one. And here's another wild fact. Since 2021, OpenAI employees have already cashed out over $3 billion through secondary stock sales. That means many of them are now free to move on and chase the next big payday. I'm honestly surprised investors are okay with this. But I guess if the valuation keeps rising, they're still happy with their returns.
With Omnium, you close your funding round faster and more successfully. Our partner Omnium is an innovative platform for growth financing. It's the one-stop shop for running a funding round, fully digital, streamlined, and cost-efficient. They provide a complete process including legal framework, investor KYC, and payment handling. If you raise with Omnium, you can choose a private round using just the platform, or go with Private Round Plus and gain access to over 10,000 registered investors. If you want a round with the widest reach and maximum public visibility, you can choose a public round, making the offer accessible to all investors. With Omnium, your fundraising becomes faster and more efficient. And if you're looking not just to grow, but to scale successfully, the Upscaler program is perfect for you. It gives you access to a large network of founders, entrepreneurs, and the right investors. Over 50 startups have already benefited from more than 500 workshops and scaled their businesses both nationally and internationally. Want to benefit from this kind of individual and personal support? Find all the information at www.upscaler.ch.
Let's get to our main topic today. Switzerland has a once-in-a-generation chance to become the world's most attractive destination for talent. That's the bold thesis from a recent opinion piece in Neue Zürcher Zeitung. It sounds ambitious, almost delusional, but maybe this is exactly the kind of self-confidence Switzerland needs right now. The article makes a compelling point. In today's world, it's not natural resources or capital that matter most, it's talent. Talent has become the most valuable global resource. And Switzerland, surprisingly, is already well positioned. We rank number one globally in the Global Talent Competitiveness Index, ahead of the US, Singapore, and others. Cities like Zurich and Lausanne consistently top global rankings for highly skilled migration. But the article also makes it clear, it's not enough to be on top. You have to stay on top. While we're still debating immigration policies with a fine-tooth comb, other countries are moving fast. Canada is proactively courting top global talent. France is pouring billions into deep tech. Even Germany, with its new opportunity card, is signaling a more competitive stance. So what must Switzerland do to not just attract top global talent, but also retain it? What role do startups play? What about our education system, bureaucracy, location policy, or even our societal openness, which is often questioned in expert circles? That's what we want to explore today, especially with a view toward the startup and VC scene here. Because if Switzerland wants to win the global talent race, it needs more than just good vibes and bold headlines. It needs structural reforms, and it needs real incentives. So, Guy, I've got a few questions for you. You're constantly talking to founders who are trying to hire international talent. What's the reality on the ground? Is Switzerland really as attractive as the NZZ article suggests, or is there more friction behind the scenes than the glossy rankings let on?
For founders here, there's no doubt. They deeply value Switzerland's quality of life, strong salaries, and legal certainty. In that sense, we're absolutely one of the most attractive places globally, no question. But if you look specifically at talent recruitment, there are still frictions. Just today, I spoke to a founder who's trying to hire two top ETH graduates, one from China and one from India. And it's proving to be a real challenge. Once their student visas expire, they don't automatically transition into the job market. The founder and his team now have to figure out how to secure work permits, which can take months. There are strict quotas. And if the authorities don't move fast enough, these highly skilled grads are forced to leave the country. Maybe they'll return, but maybe not. So yes, Switzerland is great, but it's not perfect.
The article also highlighted the role of Swiss cities. Zurich is mentioned alongside San Francisco and Boston, rightfully so. But the question remains, are we just academically top tier, or are we also culturally and professionally international enough?
I'd say cities like Zurich, Lausanne, and Geneva are absolutely world-class, especially thanks to ETH and EPFL. But I had coffee yesterday with an Israeli founder who challenged me a bit. He asked, Where are the ambitious scale-ups in Switzerland? Are there coordinated founder meetups like in Tel Aviv or the US? Where are the tech people after 6 p.m.? Are they all hiding in the mountains? Where do I find them on weekends? And from a VC perspective, he said it felt like radio silence. I have to admit, he's not wrong. Culturally, our sales drive and response time still lag behind San Francisco or Boston. That doesn't mean we won't eventually get there, but maybe we're just moving slower, which is also why in Europe most VC funds have 10 to 15 year cycles, while US funds typically aim for 7.
From a VC standpoint, what would need to change for Switzerland to truly become the number one destination for global talent? Where do we need to be bolder?
First, we need a national talent strategy with political backing, like in Canada or Germany, a proactive approach to attracting top talent. Second, we should make it easier for international founders to set up shop here. Faster visas, better access to capital, smoother bank account openings, more flexible lease terms. Right now, renting office space without a local co-signer is a nightmare if you're not a Swiss resident. Third, we need to foster visionary ecosystems. It's not enough to build small, elegant, deep tech ventures. We need to back bold ideas with serious capital, the kind needed to build global champions.
Do you think we Swiss really understand what window of opportunity is opening right now? Or are we sleepwalking through it, too focused on our beloved stability?
Some of us do see it, for sure. But unfortunately, not everyone. Switzerland's political machinery moves slowly. That's why people joke that things move even slower in Bern. We're cautiously sketching out strategies while global shifts are happening fast. The US is seeing a brain drain, and if we want to act, it has to be now, not 10 years from now. I'm not sure we're seizing the moment.
This week, I met someone interesting. He bought a house in Erlenbach on Lake Zurich and renovated it. I asked him, "Are you selling it now?" He replied, "No, I'm renting it out for 25,000 Swiss francs per month." I was shocked. Who pays that kind of rent? Turns out, an expat already signed the lease. And that's part of the story. Zurich, and even places like Lugano or Montreux, are attracting top-tier international talent from big tech firms. They're hiring en masse from local universities. But the big issue is, few of those people actually start companies here. I'll say it bluntly. Most come here to get well-paid jobs at large tech firms. They don't build startups. They earn great money, maybe live here a while, then move on. What we should aim for instead is for those brilliant people to build intellectual property here. We don't just want them earning a salary at a US corporate. That doesn't move the needle much. Sure, they consume here, pay taxes, fine. But from a VC and innovation standpoint, we want their know-how, drive, and vision to flow into Swiss ventures. That would be the cherry on top, and it's something we should be pushing for. Let's see how it all unfolds. But overall, I'd say Switzerland has a strong starting position. Let's hope we make the most of it. Now, on to our next segment, which we've been getting pinged about all week, the Beekeeper deal. I've been asked about it 8 times in the past few days. And listener Andreas wrote in with this question. Why is it that after a successful exit, we so rarely see numbers disclosed in Switzerland, like with the recent Beekeeper acquisition? What's behind the silence? And do you have any insights into the deal? Fantastic question, Andreas, and very timely. Beekeeper is a textbook case, a huge success for the team and the investors, but zero official numbers, no purchase price, no multiple. Why? First, taxes. In Switzerland, silence is golden, especially when it comes to wealth. Now, technically, gains must still be declared in tax returns. In theory, yes. But whether it's taxed depends on whether the sale is considered private or professional. If you brag too loudly, the tax authorities may reclassify your gains as commercial, and then you're in for a big bill. Second, culture. Swiss founders are different. There's no chest beating here. Success is acknowledged quietly. Third, strategy. Many founders, including at Beekeeper, stay involved post-exit or are already working on their next venture. If they disclose how much they made, it invites envy, attention, or even pressure to invest or donate. Exactly. Suddenly, you're seen more as an investor than a founder. Some want that, others don't. let's get into the Beekeeper deal itself. It really was a bombshell for the European SaaS scene and a strong signal from Switzerland. The Swiss ETH spin-off Beekeeper is merging with France's Lumapps in a deal backed by Bridgepoint. The goal? To create the first truly AI-powered employee experience platform, one that serves both desk and frontline workers. The combined group will serve over 7 million users across 2,000 companies, generate $150 million ARR, and employ 600 plus people across Europe, North America, and Asia. Beekeeper brings in its mobile-first DNA and a strong Swiss investor base: Swisscom Ventures, Swiss Post Ventures, B2 Venture, Alpana Ventures. For many of them, this marks a significant exit. And another milestone for the Swiss startup ecosystem, another unicorn-level deal with clear Swiss roots. Naturally, our curiosity got the better of us, so I asked Guy, our resident Sherlock Holmes, to go digging. What did you find out behind the scenes?
All right, let's get to the pièce de résistance of today's episode, the big finale-worthy segment. We've had about a week to dig deep, and yes, we've been asked dozens of times if we knew anything. We kept quiet, but behind the scenes, we had conversations with investors, employees, and did quite a bit of online sleuthing. And yes, we've uncovered some solid insights. Let's start with the key question. What was the price tag? What did Beekeeper fetch in this deal? We'll give you two ways of estimating it. As you know, the British PE firm Bridgepoint financed the merger between Lumapps and Beekeeper. The combined post-money valuation of the new entity is $1.1 billion. Lumapps itself was acquired by Bridgepoint last year at a reported valuation of $650 million. This figure comes from our UK colleagues, who were more transparent than the tight-lipped Swiss side. So if we assume Lumapps hasn't changed in value over the past year, that leaves $450 million as the implied value of Beekeeper. That's our high-end estimate, unless Lumapps has been written down. Let's take another. Revenue? The press release said the combined company will hit $150 million ARR by year end. Based on our intel, that's a forward-looking number. So let's conservatively assume they're at $135 million ARR today. That would imply a revenue multiple of approximately 8x. From our conversations, we learned that Beekeeper contributes around $40 million ARR, which would suggest an implied standalone valuation of around $350 million. However, multiple sources told us that this deal wasn't purely revenue-driven. Strategic and platform synergies played a big role. That puts Beekeeper in a stronger position. So, taking all that into account, I'd estimate the exit value at $400 to $450 million, with 80 to 90% confidence.
That would be a very solid exit for the Swiss ecosystem. Now, the second big question, was this a paper-only deal, or did the investors actually get a payout? Do we know if it was cash or equity?
Yes, good news. This was not just a share deal, it was indeed a cash deal. This was confirmed by several sources. And in 2025, that's a rarity. Beekeeper's investors are getting paid, and they can actually buy the champagne. The cash isn't in their bank accounts yet, but it's expected over the next few months at least with the indirect investors who invested via funds. As for the founders and key team, we don't know the exact split, but we do know they're staying on board and have taken on significant roles in the new combined company. That likely means they converted a portion of their shares into equity in the holding company, but I wouldn't be surprised if they also took some cash off the table.
Either way, the management team seems very happy. And by all accounts, they worked intensively over the past few months to make this happen. It's always encouraging when both the investors and the team benefit from an exit. Now let's look at the cap table. What do we know about Beekeeper's funding history?
We modeled the cap table, of course, with a 70 to 80% confidence level. So please take this as indicative. Beekeeper was founded in 2012. According to Crunchbase, they raised over $180 million in total, though we could only trace $165 million in specific rounds. Let's go through it. Seed round in 2016, USD 5 million with Firefly Venture Partners, B2 Venture, then B2V, Polytech Ventures, HANA Ventures, Niklas Östberg Delivery Hero, and others. Estimated valuation here, $15 to $20 million. Then came the Series A in 2017 with $8 million. The round was led by Keen Venture Partners and Niklas Zennström, Atomico Skype co-founder, and surprise, in the $13 million Series A extension in 2018, Atomico joined, along with Samsung Next, Acceleron Capital, Swiss Post Ventures, and Verve Ventures post Series A. We estimated valuation at $60 to $80 million. In 2019, the Series B with an additional $45 million followed, led by Swiss Canto with Thea Ventures, Swisscom Ventures, Alpana Ventures, and High Sage, and followed by an extension of $10 million in 2020 with Energize Ventures. Estimated valuation, $150 to $200 million. Lastly came the Series C in 2022 with $50 million from EGS Beteiligungen and Kreos Capital, and an C extension in 2025 of $35 million with HSBC Innovation Banking. The final valuation was likely $400 to $450 million. So if you look at that trajectory, all investors likely at least got their capital back, and most should see solid returns. Of course, it depends on the terms. We can only hope the late stage investors didn't insist on multiples on their liquidation preferences, or force the early stage VCs into participating preferences. But all in all, this looks like a win across the board.
Yeah, that was my thought too. And hey, seriously, amazing job on this research, Guy. Incredible how many conversations you led, how much you pulled together. Really impressive. And I think you're absolutely right. In most growth stage deals, you're looking at liquidation preferences of at least 1x, probably more. Just look at HSBC. They came in at a valuation of $400 to $450 million, which is basically right where the company exited. So if they had a standard 1x liquidity preference, they probably just got their money back, nothing more. And those $50 million from Kreos in 2022, they're known not to invest without solid downside protection. So I'd estimate that between 85 and 120 million of the total exit proceeds went to satisfying liquidation preferences at Series B and C alone. That means Series B investors probably walked away with a 1.5x to 2x return, depending on timing and terms. The further back you go, the harder it is to estimate the multiples. But early investors may have hit up to 5x, unless they were diluted down by later stage pref stacks. What always makes me smile is when these exits are blasted on LinkedIn with confetti emojis and champagne gifts, and then you do the math and realize, okay, cool, but not quite a 10x home run. I spoke to one investor who said their total return was a 2x after 5 years or so. So was it a success? Well, yes, it's a strategic win, a liquidity event, and it puts Beekeeper on a global platform. But financially, it's more of a modest outcome, right? A 2x over half a decade, that's what, maybe 10 to 15% IRR, respectable, but not a blockbuster. Let's keep things in perspective. Still, big congratulations to the founders and the team. Hopefully, the common shareholders also benefited. Kudos to the investors as well. A great win for Switzerland's tech ecosystem. Andreas, thanks again for your question. As you can see, we went deep. Hope that gives you the insight you were hoping for. And now, last but not least, deal of the week. We're heading back to Zurich and once again to the ETH Deep Tech pipeline. RTDT has just closed its pre-seed round with a whopping €4 million. Backers include Swisscom Ventures, Rockstar, Backbone Ventures, and Kick Fund. They're building smart software and sensor systems to make wind turbines more efficient and profitable. And this isn't just some theoretical proof of concept. They're already running pilots with Siemens, Suslon, and Enrocon. From what I've seen, this is a super promising deal. What's your take?
First off, love the team. And yes, we know them well. Shout out to Aris, one of RTDT's late co-founders. He previously worked with us as a VC and then jumped headfirst into entrepreneurship. You know him, full throttle, 150 miles per hour at all times.
Absolutely. I remember a pitch meeting where everyone was against the deal except Aris. And he didn't back down. He held the floor for 15 minutes, passionately defending the case. And guess what? The company has done pretty well.
Very well. RTDT is a textbook example of translating ETH research into an industrial solution. Here's the context. Wind turbine manufacturers have faced huge issues with structural damage, cracked rotor blades, material fatigue, even full tower collapses. Big names like Siemens Gamesa and Vestas were nearly sunk by warranty issues. And that's exactly where RTDT comes in. Their aerosensors measure real-time structural stress directly on the blades. No one else is doing this at scale. It's a tricky space to access.
And it's not just stick-on sensors. RTDT has built a full-stack solution. Sensors, software, data layer. Their solar-powered sensors measure air pressure, temperature, vibration, sound, and rain, and they're deployable in minutes. The data feeds into a cloud-based analytics platform that goes beyond diagnostics. It gives prescriptive insights. Think, digital twin meets intelligent maintenance.
Exactly. A decision support system for turbine operators. And the potential is huge. They're already active in Germany, India, Brazil, and Greece. Some OEMs are even working with them on co-development to integrate these sensors directly during manufacturing. That's real stickiness. They're also pursuing direct sales to wind farm operators alongside OEM partnerships.
This round originally aimed for 1.5 million euros, and now it closed at $4 million. That's impressive.
Yeah, we actually looked at the round when it was first forming. There was some back and forth on valuation and structure, and we eventually stepped back, but they pulled it off. As usual, we have a modeled cap table in front of us. Based on this information, the round was closed in three tranches with valuations ranging from just under 5 million Swiss francs to 7.5 million Swiss francs pre-money. Most of the capital came in at the higher valuation. Investors include Swisscom Ventures, Rockstar, Backbone, and Kickfund.
Aeris also brought new energy to the team, complementing the tech founders with VC experience and BD muscle. The funds will go towards scaling the team, setting up production capacity, and pushing software development further, and of course boosting business development. Classic deep tech play, but already with significant market validation. Now, Guy, what's your exit take here?
For me, the most realistic outcome is a strategic acquisition, perhaps by a large OEM or a sensor infrastructure giant like Honeywell, Trimble, or Bosch. If they manage to apply their vibration models to adjacent markets, bridges, rail, shipping, maybe even space, then yes, you could eventually think platform play, maybe even IPO potential. But first, they need to scale in wind. That's the beachhead. And interestingly, structural vibration monitoring is becoming a hot topic across many industries. Keep an eye on this space.
So, to sum it up, deep tech made in Zurich. Scalable hardware, proprietary software, a well-thought-out business model.
An excellent example of how research becomes industrial innovation. Hats off to Aeris, Imad, and the whole RTDT team on this impressive round.
That's it for today and for season two of Burn Rate. We're heading into a well-deserved summer break, but we'll be back mid-August with fresh deals, sharp insights, and new voices from the ecosystem. If you want to support us, subscribe to our newsletter, tell your founder friends, and leave us a review. Thanks for tuning in, and happy summer from all of us at Burn Rate. Take care and tschüss.